Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Monday Night Therapy with John and Todd. And some other guy joined us. Some guy, Aaron Rastostakowski, whose name constantly butcher. And we're going to be spending tonight talking about baseball season because baseball season just ended. And let's be honest, there is not a lot of football stuff going on. Should we cover the football stuff too right away, Todd, so people can feel like, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit of football and then we can spend the balance on baseball. I mean, that's what we're here to do tonight. But there is a little bit of football news.
What news do you have in football, Todd?
Well, you know, I was not around last week, and I guess in the meantime, there were some Nebraska fans that were trying to wipe the stink off of Dylan Raiola, you know, and the fact that he decided to leave to Georgia, but it didn't take Matt Rhule very long to jump into the sweepstakes for Danny Kalen. That's probably not accurate because he had committed to Mizzou. But as soon as it became apparent that Raiola was going to go to Georgia, it must not have been a secret that if that happened, then Kalen would decommit from Missouri and make himself available to come to Nebraska. And then the more you read about it, that's where he wanted to be all along. And so now he's in that Elite 11 camp, which that's a pretty impressive thing. So, good on Matt Rhule pulling in another quarterback with that 2024 class.
Somebody's mic is picking up people screaming in the background and all sorts of buzzing.
I figured you could hear some of that. I don't know what's happening upstairs, but it sure isn't getting ready for bedtime, it doesn't seem like.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I talked about Thursday night, we talked about Danny Kalen and committing to Nebraska. And the one thing I brought up Thursday night is this. Danny Kalen seems like he's more of a drop back passer. And then people, you know, with the guy we have now that's going to be our starting quarterback is Jeff Sims, and he's not a complete drop-back passer. He's more of a dual-threat guy. So, I mean, what does this say? I know that people want the Danny Kalen kid to come in because they want the two receivers from, what is it, Bellevue West, that are really highly rated. But I guess I saw Adam Carriker put out a video that said what Jeff Sims tells us about Matt Rhule's offense. And when I looked at that and I think about the fact that they just recruited a guy that's different than Jeff Sims, I thought, well, it doesn't tell us a damn thing other than he can modify it over time to fit the players he has, maybe. And I guess this stuff is a long ways off anyway. So,
well, Dylan Raiola was not the same. Dylan Raiola was more of a drop back guy.
Right.
So, I think what it is that, Jeff Sims might be, the best quarterback that was available, and Rhule was able to get him, out of the portal. And based upon the fact that there still are quite a few players that have played in more of a dual threat type of an offense, it could be just kind of a transition. Jeff Sims may be the one that's in place while they build, the rest of the offense because he's got some experience, he's got some skills. Who knows? But, it's a win for Matt Rhule as far as I'm concerned because Danny Kalen, I mean, the fact that he's invited to that Elite 11. The fact that he's invited to that puts him in, a high level, the high level category of quarterbacks from that class. And, he's not Dylan Raiola, but, he must be pretty damn good. And he's a Nebraska kid, and so they've kept a Nebraska kid at home. So I think that's a win for Matt Raiola. Or not Matt Raiola, Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule.
Anything else for football?
I think that's about it, isn't it? I mean, Aaron and I have been doing baseball. That's all right. We've been totally focused in on baseball. So I don't know what else has been going on.
Well, the only other thing I bring up is expansion talk, which is all over the place about the Big Ten inviting like Oregon and Washington, which, you know, if the Big Ten was going to expand, Oregon, Washington might be decent teams to expand with. I also see people talking about bringing in Stanford and Cal. They're not bringing in Stanford and Cal. Why the hell would they bring in Stanford? I know people are going to respond and go, well, it's the academic things. We don't need academic schools in an athletic conference, and that's what the Big Ten is now. I don't know if you've noticed, but everything about this stuff has shifted away from like, well, we want to be about academics to, oh, crap, we're losing money left and right in our athletic departments despite having huge TV contracts. We're in massive debt all over the place. We need teams that will watch people who will watch football teams and compete at football because that's going to pay all our bills. So, you know, we're not – Stanford and Cal are not joining the Big Ten, and none of this stuff is happening this year, and we're all talking about expansion. On Twitter constantly, and there's people with inside sources about expansion, and I just it's not happening. It's not happening by fall, so who cares? Is that like a crappy attitude?
That's kind of my attitude. Who cares? And you know, why worry about those West Coast teams? I mean, if you're going to expand, you got Clemson and Florida State down there. I'd go after those two. You know, I mean, it sounds like the ACC is looking to implode, or at least there's five or seven teams in the ACC, you know, that want to, you know, make some kind of decisions because of their piss poor television contracts and stuff. You know, there's a, now that they have expanded the playoffs to 12 teams, I think that there's some renewed levels of anxiety among, you know, some schools that are not in the SEC and not in the Big Ten. So there's going to be a lot of talk. We'll see if something happens.
Oh, look, it's a comment from regular Linda Wilkins who says, hey, Todd, why did you punk out last week?
Linda, I had some family things I needed to take care of last week. They weren't major, but they needed a little bit of attention, and I needed to handle some of that stuff last week. So,
All right. So, baseball. I'll just kick this off for you guys. We'll get started. The moment that Nebraska lost to Maryland for the second time and got eliminated from the Big Ten baseball tournament, and it was clear that we weren't going to make the NCAA tournament without winning the Big Ten tournament, we got responses on Twitter from people that want Will Bolt fired. You guys, let's just go right into this. You know, because that's the big. At the first series of every season, there is somebody that sends us a message that says they need to fire the pitching coach, or they need to fire the batting coach, or they need to fire the coach. Literally every season, I usually tweet this out at the beginning of baseball season just to get ahead of those people. So what do you guys think? What kind of a season?
I had told someone off within probably 5 minutes of us losing that. Had already asked for Bolt's head. I hadn't even packed up to go down to the press conference yet.
But why? Why do you think Will Bolt should stay?
I mean, he won a conference championship about 2 years ago right now. I think yesterday or the day before was the two-year anniversary of that. So,
but he won that with Darren Erstad's players.
Yeah, some of them. He did fall into to Schwellenbach, but beyond that,
Todd,
I'm with Aaron. I mean, that's one of the most ridiculous things that I've heard. If Will Bolt if he's got a weakness, and you know, I think he's a really good coach. If he's got a weakness, at least in the last couple of years, he hasn't been able to bring in guys that are top line pitchers and enough of them. I'll put it that way. Whether it's through the portal or whether, you know, bringing them in as freshmen and then developing them. When you look at, in my opinion, when we were you know, looking at the best teams in the conference, Iowa and Maryland and Indiana certainly had stronger pitching than Nebraska did. I didn't think it was even close. And maybe the development is part of an issue, though, you know, Aaron and I, we've chatted quite a bit about this. I think there's some young arms in that bullpen that I wish, you know, we would have seen more of rather than an inning here and an inning there. You know, and so I don't know. I don't want to beat up on Jeff Christie. I sit here and I think, you know, we got Rob Childress, you know, who is on the staff, you know, in a non-coaching role. But Rob Childress is as good a pitching coach as you're going to find in the country. So that's a problem that needs to be addressed, and that needs to be firmed up if Nebraska is going to get to the next level. That's the way I see it. Getting rid of Will Bolt, that's the dumbest thing that I've heard anybody say. I mean, that's just stupid.
Yeah, so I was bored because I don't like Iowa or Maryland. So I was looking up all of our pitchers that have both come and gone since Bolt's been here, like as either JUCOs or just grad transfers and such. And really, I mean, we had Tyler Martin, who was good both here, and then he went to Southern Miss, I think it was. Bo Blessy was the highest pitching recruit we'd probably ever had. Didn't do anything for us. Now he's a weekend starter for Texas Tech. Braxton Bragg was a closer, an okay closer. Now he's a Friday night starter for a Dallas Baptist team that's, I think, a 2 seed in the tournament. And Ethan Bradford went from a guy that was just a so-so guy to he's probably going to get drafted now this year out of Kansas. So guys that were pitchers on our staff excelled other places. That's kind of a knock on our pitching coach if they're going that much better when they move along. And so then I also looked at who's come here and done well. And really, I mean, Roach did better than he did at his previous stop. Cam Wynn was kind of about the same. And then Povich and Cody Frank were 2 JUCO guys that did better than they had at the previous stops. But that's really about it as far as either exceeded expectations or met expectations once they've reached our pitching coaches.
Well, Kaminska had a good season coming in from Wichita State.
Yeah, but he was kind of supposed to be that because he was a freshman All-American. And
sure.
So what do we think of that? I mean, let's be honest. Everybody, you guys are better at baseball than I do. That's why I have you. By the way, if you guys watching this didn't pay attention to their baseball coverage at coordination.com, shame on you. Shame on you. Yeah. Okay. Everybody I know that is a baseball guy says we need to have a pitching coach who was a pitcher. And Jeff Christie did not play pitcher. He played catcher, right?
Yep. Dang good one, too.
Well, I mean, the difference is this. You have Rob Childress, but Rob Childress can't be there at the game, right? He can't be at the game and be one of those guys that walks out to the mound.
Rob Childress is at the game. Rob Childress is in the dugout at games.
Okay.
Now, he's not.
He's the loudest one in the dugout.
Yeah. But he's not calling pitches. He's not going out to the mound. But I don't know what he's doing in the dugout. I don't know what kind of conversations he's having in the dugout. But, you know, there is something to be said about the development of these guys once we get them. And, you know, like Aaron said, you know, you got a kid that was a relief pitcher for us. That's a Friday night starter at Dallas Baptist. And, you know, Dallas Baptist, I mean, they got a hell of a baseball program. And so, you know, that tells you a little bit about, you know, the way our guys are being coached maybe and developed. I that concerns me a little bit. And, you know, when you look at the pitching staff, you know, one of the things that I just was licking my chops at this year was looking at the number of freshman left-handers that we had on our staff that all came in with some pretty good pedigrees. And we ran the top one out, you know, in San Diego. He was he started, you know, the third game of the season out there. And, you know, he's got lightning stuff. I mean, he's got stuff. But he got so rattled. I mean, in fact, you know, they had him, he started a few more games. And then, you know, once he'd get
Who's
hit,
that?
Caleb Clark from Canada.
Okay, right. All right.
And once he'd get hit, you know, he just lost all composure. And they weren't able, you know, they gave him a few chances later on. They'd bring him in and, you know, to throw a little bit of relief and stuff. And it didn't seem like they could ever get him, you know, around the corner a little bit so that he could stand out there on the mound and consistently throw strikes and compete. So, I mean, there's work to do with that kid. But they also got, you know, this Gutierrez kid from Texas, and they got Jalen Worthy from Lincoln. But at most we saw those guys, you know, maybe we saw Worthy pitch two innings once, maybe. But usually it was an inning. And why weren't we moving some of those guys in? I don't know that. Again, I'm not a pitching coach, but doggone it. Michigan State throws out that kid that they pitched against us. He's a freshman. And, you know, they rolled him out there. He threw, you know, what, six innings against Nebraska? I don't know. That part of it's frustrating for me.
Yeah, I think with Clark, it's all mental issues, because it's like that's John saw him up in Minnesota strike out the projected number 7 overall pick playing for Ole Miss, and then got another guy out and then gave up like a bloop base hit or something like that, something that shouldn't have happened, and then just kind of spiraled out of control at that point. It seems like it's all mental for him. Once we can get him kind of on the right path, I think he'll definitely come back out. But yeah, you're not going to do that unless you're on the mound.
Yeah.
I didn't get to play baseball much when I was a kid. I had to go to work when it's a sad story. My dad died when I was 12 of pancreatic cancer. I literally had to go to work after that to buy clothes and shoes and shit. It's you know, that's the way it was in the old days when we were walking uphill both ways in waist deep snow hunting buffalo on our way to school. Anyway, I mean, isn't pitching, I mean, pretty much 98% mental? I mean, it's you against a batter. That's kind of the sport. That's all of it. It's literally a pitcher versus a batter, and then there's just a bunch of other guys standing around waiting for something to happen. So pitching, am I wrong about that?
Pitching is more mental than it is physical. But you still have to be able to locate your pitches, and you have to be confident. You have to be confident that you're going to put the ball where it needs to be. You know, Coach Bolt talked whenever things went bad for Nebraska this year. And I mean, this has been the way he's been ever since he's been the head coach. Coach Bolt says, you got to attack the strike zone. You've got to throw strikes. And, you know, you get some of those guys that are out there and they won't touch the strike zone because they're scared to death that they're going to leave something in there that's going to get hit out of the ballpark. There's a lot.
Yeah, we heard it a ton of times in the press conferences down there. You'd ask people, well, why are you guys doing so good pitching this week? Well, I've got the confidence that if I throw a strike in there, no one's hitting it out of the park. So
yeah,
I can throw the strike and nothing's going to happen. So
that's a good point.
Yeah. Heck, the kid from Rutgers, that Savakul, that's almost a direct quote. He said, I attacked the strike zone because I knew that it wasn't going to get hit out of the park.
Mm-hmm. And Walsh, because it's Walsh so hard to hit homers all three there, of his what? Pitches on both of the plate. Yeah. And didn't matter what he threw, where he threw it, it wasn't going out. And that's how you get a complete game with very few pitches. What do you have, 104?
104 pitches in a complete
game.
You guys
had that in the fourth inning a few times this year.
Yeah, Brody Breck was pulled in 4.2 innings earlier and with 104 pitches.
Linda Wilkins comes in with, yes, you are wrong, John. My God, it's like we're married, Linda. What the hell? I'm of the attitude that sports is 98% mental, no matter what sport you're playing. But, you know, because if you don't have the mental attitude, if you don't have confidence, if you don't have, you know, faith in your teammates, I mean, pitchers have to have a defense around them. The defense screws up. That's got to destroy their confidence a little bit. Okay.
Well, you know, I will say this, John. I mean, you're making a really solid point there. And, you know, we were in press conferences with, you know, the coaches from the Big Ten. I didn't get to listen to them all, but they consistently talked about confidence, about trust, about, you know, those types of characteristics that, you know, their players exhibited out on the field when they were playing. And, you know, it is such an incredible, important part of the game. And I think at times, you know, that's we can see it lacking with some of our pitchers.
Okay. Blaine Cole comes in with any idea what the average batting average is in college baseball?
Aaron's the stat guy.
I looked at so there's like 300 teams. I looked at the 150th team to see what they were batting this year. And that would be your Pacific, close, 279.
279? Huh? Wow. And you don't know baseball, John. You don't know baseball.
I covered it for a while before you guys came along. I used to know what whip meant, but, you know, a lot of that stuff went away a little while ago. Plus, I have you guys, and you guys can actually remember everybody's name, and I really struggle with that part of it. Okay, so define this for me so that I can tell other people, because I'm mouthier than either of you put together. Did Nebraska have a good year, a crappy year, an average year? What did Nebraska do?
I think based on all the preseason stuff, they pretty much met expectations because we were picked, what, fifth? Yeah. Were we ahead of Illinois? I forget.
Yeah.
Fifth in the preseason. I think we were. Ended up fourth by like half a game and ended up only losing to the top seed in the tournament. And our only losses in the regular season were lost the series in Iowa and in Maryland. So that's pretty much about where they thought we'd be, at least conference-wise. Non-conference, boy, we got a lot of work to do there.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was up with that? I'll go ahead and answer the question, Todd, and then we'll move on to the midweek.
I would say Nebraska had a good season. You know, they were 23-33 last year. They ended up 33-23-1 or something, you know, close to that this year. Will Bolt made a comment during his last press conference that I'm still mulling it over. I'm still trying to grasp exactly what it means. But he was asked by one of the reporters, so, you know, what was the difference this year? You know, what, you know, as you reflect, what did it come down to this year? And he says, well, I'm going to tell you the same thing I told you last year. It comes down to five games. He says, the way I believe it, it usually comes down to about five games. And he said, you know, if we change the outcome in five of those games, you know, we're a 38-win team. And a 38-win team is going to look significantly different, you know, in the eyes of those people making decisions about regionals and you know, five more wins may have adjusted us someplace in the bracket. You know, I don't know. But I'm still trying. Is there more to that comment than that? I don't know. But this team this year could definitely play with the best teams. There was no question on any given day. Nebraska could compete with the best teams. But what happened in those midweek games with South Dakota State, North Dakota State, Omaha, Creighton is beyond baffling to me. I don't have any kind of – I don't have an explanation for that.
Devil's advocate. He spent the whole season in the midweek games just playing around with pitchers. That would be my stupid guy comment. That he didn't know who really... he didn't know he was going to throw out midweek, and it was like a testing ground to see if he could develop them for years to come or some damn thing. I don't know. It just seemed like it was chaos.
He kind of fell into Will Walsh that way when he kind of had run out of with sicknesses and people pitching the weekend before. He kind of had to go to Will Walsh and just happened to catch lightning there. But beyond that, he at towards the end, once he started realizing, man, we're not winning any of these midweek games. And by that time, it may have even been too late to win the midweek games to change our RPI from the start of the season the way some of those teams played. Even if we'd have beat them, it wouldn't have helped our RPI a ton. But he started throwing Shaneman and Hawkins every single night on those midweek games and might help you win. It should have helped us win. Didn't always help us win, but didn't really help us for next year and helping the guys that Todd already talked about, Gutierrez and Worthley and Clark. Usually in the past, we'd see those guys midweek games to see how they're going to handle weekend games in the future.
James Boardman says crappy midweek gimme games killed them. And I think that's the attitude that so many baseball – listen, I don't think there's any doubt that Nebraska has very, very passionate baseball fans. We have – compared to the Big Ten Conference, we sure as hell have more fans than pretty much the rest of them put together, with the exception of Maryland. Maybe Rutgers, because they came from the Indiana. ACC, where they actually play baseball and give a shit. But, I mean, we have a passionate fan base, and that's why people get frustrated, and that's why they say, oh, fire that guy. But I don't know. I kind of look at this season, and that's the thing that still sticks with me is – losing to North Dakota State, for God's sakes, and Omaha. What the fucking you know what? I honestly would listen to those games for a while, and I'd just get so tense and pissed off. I'd just shut off the Greg Sharp on the Huskers app, and I'd listen. That's why I checked Slack, and I would go, "What's the score?" Because, you know, then I could be pissed off some more.
Most of the time, teams like Kansas State, South Alabama, and even Omaha recently and Creighton recently have helped our RPI. But even if we would have beat them this year, their RPIs were so terrible. I don't think wins even in that would have helped our RPI any. So while it just sucks losing to them, I don't put a whole lot of stock in actually beating them, helping our season get into like the NCAAs or anything like that.
Yeah. Kansas State was a bubble team. You know, they were one of the first four out that didn't make the regionals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nebraska's consistently played Kansas State, you know, in midweek games. It makes sense. It's a short bus ride away. But, you know, Aaron and I were talking, it wasn't either of our ideas. It was brought up by, I think, a World Herald reporter that, you know, maybe Nebraska needs to look at picking up Missouri for a midweek game. You know, you can bus to Missouri. You know, maybe somehow figure out an Oklahoma State, you know, in the midweek or something like that. They, you know, now you sit here and say, well, hell, we can't even beat Omaha. We can't beat North Dakota State. But, there has to be a way that Nebraska can better position themselves. You know, and
Dondre comes in with the comment, poor motivation to play small school. Do you think there's anything to that? I think that's a good comment.
I do. I mean, the Nebraska team just did not look like they were, you know, excited to play those games. I don't know, Aaron, maybe you might
reverse that. How many of those guys have ever played in front of 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people before for those little schools? That was the time of their life was coming to play us and get a play in that stage. And I mean, South Dakota, that one didn't bother me. Those guys have a Big Ten batting lineup. We should have hammered their pitching, but those guys scoring runs on us, they might have had the best visiting player to come to Hawks Field and their catcher. That guy was – he's going to be hear his name on draft day for sure. But, yeah, I think motivation both ways, they're definitely elevated to play us with our fans, and we could be experiencing some of the motivation that we're just going to go in there and rock their freshman pitcher on Wednesday night. But if you don't put in the work, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know. When I think of this team, you know, we saw perhaps two of the best players in the last 20 years that have played at Nebraska, Max Anderson and Bryce Matthews. We saw some home state heroes, you know, that, you know, wore their emotions on their sleeve, you know, that overcame adversities and that type of stuff. Kyle Perry, you know, Shea Shaneman, you know, this was a team that was easy to like, in my opinion, easy to like and easy to cheer for. But God dang, there were so many Tuesdays and Wednesdays, you know, I wanted to beat the cat. Because, you know, or kick the dog. It just, they were just infuriating, you know?
Do you have a cat?
No, but there are dogs above me and below me. So I could have found a dog to get.
Wow.
A great Dane below and a German Shepherd above. I might have been in trouble.
Those dogs would have kicked your ass, Todd. I can tell you right from having a dog that's 105 pounds, great German Shepherd lab mix. She just beats the shit out of me most of the time, not the other way around. But, okay, we're halfway through this stuff. Let's talk about who's gone and who do we think's coming in. I mean, Shea Shaneman's pitched his last game. Kyle Perry has pitched his last game as a Husker. Who else is – obviously Max Anderson and Bryce Matthews are probably going to get drafted high enough in the draft that they're going to go, I'm taking the money. And they should, because, I mean, if somebody was going to – somebody called me up and said, John, you could quit all that YouTube stuff. Here's $1 million. I'd go, well, what about Todd? Wait, I wouldn't say that. I'd just go, $1 million? Fuck that guy.
Well,
but you know what I mean?
We do know that CJ Hood apparently is gone because he entered the portal while they were doing mound repair for Shea Shaneman in the Rutgers game. What the hell is that?
That's not a good sign, is it?
That's not a good sign. Yeah, you know, I mean, here's a kid that's been injured, that had gone through rehab and stuff. And, you know, he had some quality appearances last year. Hopefully, you know, he would come back and, you know, be effective next year. And Greg Sharp announces that he entered the portal while we had that delay to fix the mound for Shea Shaneman when they brought him back in against Maryland. I mean, what the hell is going on with that? So...
Linda Wilkins comes in again. It says, John, $1 million is not what it was. Well, yeah, I know. I did ribs today. I smoked ribs today. God, you go to the store and you look at the rib prices and you're like, holy shit, what the hell is going on out there? I mean, maybe they should start taking the sickly ribs and just throwing them in there sometimes and say, you can buy sickly ribs for half off. I don't know. But, okay, so who else is gone? Who are we losing?
So we did have to confirm that Shea Shaneman was leaving because that was the first question after after the press when the press conference was after our loss. Because Shea Shaneman had pitched that the day against Maryland and then the game before against Maryland. Coach Vaughn from Maryland just sat down and looked at our assistant SID and goes, Shaneman graduated, right? And so he had to confirm that that was indeed the case. So he didn't have to worry about him anymore. But yeah, we lose him and Perry. Emmett Olson could be drafted on the mound. Kaminska, I don't think he will, but he could be a late round pick. I'm not sure. Other than that, we get back. Hawkins will be back for our kind of setup guy, stopper guy, and hopefully Kaminska, Walsh. Christo needs to take a big leap, and then the three young lefties are kind of the base that we're hoping to start with if we can get them all back. So I think the mound, we should be in pretty decent shape.
Well, they're going to go into the portal and they'll bring somebody in the portal. And I think
they've
already dipped into the JUCO ranks to bring in some defensive players. I guess I don't recall seeing them bringing in a pitcher from the JUCO.
Not yet that I've seen.
Yeah.
They've tried to replace or try and get as many guys to be on the roster to replace Max and Bryce as they can, because unless Bryce slipped at the end of the season with that back injury, if that caused concern for people, he may slip a little bit in the draft, but I doubt it. I'm guessing they're both top 3-4 round picks at the worst.
Charlie Fisher's gonna be gone. He was one and done.
Will we have an outfield next year?
Yes, we get the best outfielder didn't even play this year because he broke his collarbone or I forget his shoulder.
Yeah, something right before the start of the season.
Who's that?
Second to last practice before they started the season. Brumbaugh from Oklahoma State.
Yep.
He was when he came out of high school. He was a projected second round pick and went to Oklahoma State and had some issues down there and. Was a second baseman, and they kind of we just barely lost out to Oklahoma State on him. And then Bolt, once he saw he was in the portal, gave him a call real, real quick. And so they think he's going to be basically what Jackson Hallmark was and be infielder that switches to outfield and just excels.
You know, if he'd have been healthy, he would have been the center fielder. Casey Burnham would have probably played one of the corner positions, and who knows what would have happened with the other ones. But I'm not worried about the outfield next year. If Brumbaugh is healthy, you're going to slot him in. Gabe Swanson's coming back. You got, Caleb Evans tailed off at the end of the year, but, Garrett Anglum, he'll be healthy hopefully next year. They've got other guys. They've got other guys that they're going to bring in and they're going to bring along. The outfield's not a place I'm worried about.
Is E-Fry gone?
Yeah, yep. my E-Fry's gone.
He was a player.
I love E-Fry.
I thought E-Fry, he played damn good defense. He didn't hit the ball well, right? Am I right about that? Yeah, yep. I think there were a lot of people that did not like him, but I always thought, he was good on the field.
He played a big role in our championship run, taking over for Schwellenbach when he would come from shortstop and go pitch. That was always Efry's job.
Efry puts the bat on the ball. In fact, he was right around 300 this year when he got hurt this year. Now, it wasn't last year, but
– Right, okay.
You know, he always played with a smile on his face. He always played hard. You could plug him in about anywhere. I have literally seen him play every position in the infield, first, second, short, and third. Just one of those kids that you love to watch play. you know, if we're figuring that Bryce and Max are gone, you know, the plan has been to slot Dylan Carey in at shortstop. I don't know, after watching that kid make, you know, golden glove type plays, I mean, he just Aaron will tell you, my jaw hit the top of the table on a couple of the plays that he made in the first Maryland game. I just haven't seen anything like that at third base. I'd leave the kid at third base and hope you can bring in someone else to play shortstop. I don't know, but he is an amazing defensive player, and he has got a cannon in that right arm. I mean, it is just amazing how hard he can throw that ball across the diamond. He's got to grow. I mean, they blew bunt coverage twice against Maryland. And he was, I'm going to guess, I don't know what coverage the call was, but I kind of think he messed up on one of them. But he wasn't the only one. He wasn't the only one, so.
James Boardman comes in with, this is a little while ago, a user comment. Do they need to hire a team psychologist?
Yeah.
Every baseball team should have that on.
Doesn't Nebraska provide that for all of them?
I think they've got, something, because I think Bryce said that he utilized that last year when he was kind of opening up about his struggles.
Yeah. Hey, save that one from Kevin for later.
We will. Yeah. Linda Wilkins is commenting on my smoking ribs and said, bought any brisket lately? My family is not, they're not a brisket family. I have only smoked that maybe once or twice, and they were like, we're okay without it. We're not a huge meat eater family. So, I don't eat a lot of meat just because of the whole heart attack health thing. And, there you go.
I don't have a smoker right now. I've done brisket 3 times. 2 were failures. 1 was, I would say, a minor success. I think Aaron's the big smoker. So
I've only done brisket once. It turned out probably 2/3 of it turned out great. 1/3 got a little dry, but I called that a success for my first time.
Blaine Cole comes in, lest we forget Roscoe Rhodes and so many others who made the ultimate sacrifice. It is Memorial Day, and Memorial Day is for the ones that never made it out of their uniforms. So thank you, Blaine Cole, for reminding us. Although, honestly, I Roscoe Rhodes, I don't know who that is. And I should, probably.
I tell you what, and I'll just – take a moment here. I'm not a member of a military family. I had a cousin, that served in Vietnam. I've got relatives 3 generations back, that were military people. But I tell you what, Memorial Day is always one for reflection. And I don't know if any of you other folks have seen it on Twitter, but if you haven't, you might want to look it up. There's this video that people put up there every year about this time where, the people in France who live nearby Normandy go to the U.S. cemetery. And if you've seen that live, that's got to be an amazing place. I went to a military cemetery in Luxembourg last fall, and not like the ones in Normandy, but nonetheless impressive, I guess, impressive, solemn. But that video shows about how the people from that town, that village nearby, prior to Memorial Day, go down to the beach and bring up buckets of wet sand. And they rub the sand into the names of those who gave their lives on the marble crosses. And I don't know. That kind of chokes me up every time I see it. And Linda Wilkins says, I'm a retired U.S. Army Master Sergeant. Linda, we thank you. You have my utmost respect. for your service.
My God, Linda Wilkins, what haven't you done, woman? What haven't you done? Okay, let's see what else we got. We'll see if we had Fred Sacco. I haven't called Fred's name, but Fred Sacco says, heard our former head coach beat the cat after many losses down on O Street the last 5 years. With beat the cat being in quotations. Oh, my God. Okay. One thing I want to point out is that the man-killing mastodons T-shirts are up on the website. So there's one design of man-killing mastodons. And then there's this one is kind of like somebody has told me this looks like a metal band. So I picked two designs for the man-killing mastodons T-shirts. Go buy them and support us or support me because I need it. I'm starving.
Hey, John.
Maybe I can buy some. Maybe I can afford some brisket.
They released the regional rankings today. You know the brackets of 64. Aaron, I'm sure you've taken a look at them. What are your thoughts? Did the Big Ten have a chance of any of the three teams advancing to the Super Regional, or what's your overall view of what you saw with the brackets?
I haven't looked into them too much. I had a busy day. But, yeah, I saw Maryland, their RPI was the worst. They got the worst draw. They're probably not going to make it out. And Iowa, I forget who Iowa had.
I was in with Indiana State.
Yeah. So in theory, I haven't paid much attention to Indiana State. I hear all these state teams are really hard to beat in the middle of the week, so we'll see how hard they are on the weekend for Iowa. But then they go to, I think they've got a
Arkansas
on the other side, which yeah. Is always a rough place to play in the postseason, as we all well know. And then who else? What, Indiana. Where'd they go? I didn't even remember where they went.
I think Indiana's got a little bit tougher run. They're
what the hell does a Big Ten conference have to do to? Penn State fired their coach, or he's not coming back next season.
Well, Northwestern needs to fire theirs.
Well, that guy, it looks like he's destroyed their baseball program, so I can't imagine they'd keep him around. But, I mean, what does the Big Ten have to do to – I mean, let's face it. Let's say Nebraska won their midweek games. You still look at the Big Ten and you go, well, thanks, Penn State, for sucking our RPI into the basement. Same with Northwestern. And this happens every freaking year.
Well, let me throw something at you. I'm going to just toss this at you. There was something that I saw on Twitter, and I've been looking for it again, and I haven't been able to find it, but I found another graphic where they laid the average attendance at SEC games right next to average attendance for the Big Ten. So there's 14 SEC teams. How many Big Ten teams do you think had average attendance that would make it into the rankings of the SEC above number 14?
Two.
One.
That's just one. Us then.
Nebraska. Really? Nebraska would be number 8 in the SEC with an average, and I'm looking at last year's numbers.
12,000.
Average of 5,028. This year it's a little bit lower. Okay. But last year they would have ranked number 8 in the SEC. And there's not another Big Ten team that had average attendance at their games higher than the 14th team in the SEC. Number 14 in the SEC is Missouri. And they're the only SEC team that didn't make the top 50. Now, there is one more team, I guess, that would be – excuse me, I screwed up. Indiana would be above Missouri, but that's the only team from the SEC that Indiana would have ranked above. I mean, Northwestern, Average attendance, 216 people.
Oh, my God.
216 people. So what does the Big Ten have to do? They've got one of the most successful television networks in the country for conference networks, but yet we watch replays of the 1984 Ohio State-Indiana football game on Tuesday nights when we could watch Iowa play, if they were on TV on Tuesday night, Iowa might play Missouri on a Tuesday night. You know,
that's a good point.
We've got the Big Ten Plus, where they've got cameras in every ballpark, but yet they got student broadcasters. They're set up to do this, and you could run baseball games Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights, multiple games Friday, multiple games Saturday, multiple games Sunday, and promote the sport. They could do that. And don't tell me that BTN doesn't have the money to make that happen. That could easily happen.
Well, it just so happens we've got a commissioner coming in that started MLB Network, so
there you
go. If not his little number one thing to do, that should be his little pet project, is getting baseball the
you think that'll happen?
And, yeah. I think it will happen.
When I have asked about this, I think I was at Minnesota game and I was talking, I can't remember who I was talking to, somebody from BTN. But they, they had the Minnesota baseball game and they were, what they usually do is they put like GoPro cameras up on the rails and then they move around to them. But he was saying that the Big Ten doesn't like investing in baseball because they spend this money on it and then the weather happens and then they don't get to show the games. And
how many Big Ten games? How many games is that? How many games is that? It's not that many. They usually play.
Well, you know how many series we had this year outside of Hawks Field where there was instant replay? In the Big Ten?
One.
Zero.
What? Are you serious?
None of them had it set up. Yep. That has to be a priority.
Again, that has to be a priority.
Again, the conference does not invest in baseball. They just don't give a shit.
Blowing calls left and right and not get them corrected. Yeah.
That's disrespectful to the game in this day and age. I mean, that makes no sense.
Yeah, things like that have to be corrected. Getting more cameras out there, more recognition for baseball, that should be, and it should be easy for our new commissioner with what he's done in his past. I expect to see those, and I expect UCLA and USC to beat that door as well.
I would hope so. Right now, the Big Ten, I would say they've got four, maybe they got four. They got four top tier coaches, I think. Maybe five.
Name them.
Heller, Vaughn.
Name Owen. The schools, too. People don't know this stuff. I don't know this stuff.
Heller at Iowa. He's the best coach.
Iowa. That son of a bitch.
Vaughn at Maryland.
Owen at Maryland. He's a good coach.
Owen at Rutgers. Bolt at Nebraska.
Tracy Smith.
The big one, yep.
Tracy Smith at Michigan. Those guys are top-tier coaches, period. And the coach at Indiana ain't bad.
What about that guy at Purdue? State.
Yeah.
What about what's that shithead's name at Purdue?
That sleazeball.
Keep him at Purdue.
Yeah, no shit. Okay, we have like 5 minutes left, and a little while ago, Kevin came in with a comment that we're going to discuss at the end of this show. And he says, should we be sad or joyful for Gary Barta's retirement? If you don't know, Gary Barta is the athletic director at Iowa up until, I think, July or something, August.
August 1.
He's going to retire after 17 years. So what do you guys, should we be sad, Todd? Should we be sad or joyful that he's retiring?
Gary Barta has cost the University of Iowa and the taxpayers of the great state of Iowa millions of dollars because of decisions that he has made that has put him in conflict with Title IX and civil rights legislation in the last 10 years. I mean, in my opinion, and I understand Gary Barta, you know, he was on this selection committee and that selection committee. He's a buffoon. And, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say that he's anti-women. With the way that he's handled some women's athletic issues at the University of Iowa. There was a time when the University of Iowa was so far ahead of the curve with women's athletics when they had a men's athletics director and a women's athletic director. Dr. Christine Grant was the women's athletic director at Iowa, and she built the women's program into one of the premier programs in the country. And then they consolidated with Gary Barta. And he has been sued by darn near every women's program that Iowa fields. So what has Gary Barta done for Iowa? Well, maybe a few facilities upgrades, and he stood by Captain Kirk. He has been a loyal subordinate to Captain Kirk. Captain Kirk runs the athletic program at Iowa. Gary Barta is the public face.
So is that the next step?
No.
I mean, realistically, who do you replace Gary Barta with?
Talking some gal from Ball State.
Oh, come on. It's Kirk Ferentz. You know it is.
No.
What? Listen. Gary Barta has provided us with hours and hours and hours of entertainment. I mean, you can turn on, you look up at Netflix and goes, there's nothing to watch. What did Gary Barta do today? And bam, there you go. He's better than 17, you know, James Boardman brings up Sean Eichhorst. Yeah, Sean Eichhorst was terrible, but I don't think Sean Eichhorst got sued by everybody. You know what I mean? Sean Eichhorst was a bad athletic director for Nebraska, but he did not cost us millions and millions of dollars in lawsuits. And, you know, Gary Barta was on a whole different level. So should we be joyful or sad? Aaron, what do you think?
I just want to know who Brian Ferentz has to report to now.
Yeah,
you're not going to get that same deal.
Who was going to be the boss of Brian?
Yeah, who are they going to hire to be Brian's boss?
And here's the thing about that. If you're a person looking at an athletic director position, do you really want to come into that situation? I mean, I realize that if you're the person they're talking about for Ball State to step up to the Big Ten is a huge leap for your career, but at the same time, you're going to be basically a puppet on a string in a lot of ways. Do you really want to do that as a career move?
Well,
I would think you'd be better than the guy that you replaced in some aspects like that.
James Boardman comes back and says, no, I'm suggesting him for the Iowa job, Sean Eichhorst. Thank you, James.
Here's the deal. Don't think that Kirk Ferentz is untouchable at Iowa. Kirk Ferentz is untouchable at Iowa because of Gary Barta. Gary has provided him the cover. He's provided him, you know, with undying loyalty. You remove Gary Barta from the picture, and Kirk Ferentz doesn't have the kind of support beyond Gary Barta that people from the outside think he has. He's not a favorite of the boosters. He's not. And he's not a favorite of Joe Average season ticket holder.
So we should be sad. We should be sad.
I think we should be sad from the standpoint that they could, in 5 years, they could be rid of Kirk Ferentz, and who knows where they may end up.
Okay. Is there anything else that we didn't cover on baseball? Is a baseball program in good hands?
I think so. And can I share with you my favorite quote from the post-game press conferences?
Yes.
Other than as Shea Shaneman graduated. They asked, because Maryland won the Big Ten regular season last year and then didn't do anything in the tournament. And so they asked Rob Vaughn kind of two different questions kind of in the same vein and asked him why he thinks they did better this year. And he said, kind of alluding to the fact that they didn't do great against Michigan State. They had a real bad game that first one. And then he said, we played a much better brand of baseball this year. When you get in front of 10,000 Cornhusker fans, it's easy to flip that switch because the fans came out for both of those games. And then they also had to play in front of, unfortunately, I didn't see the final number. I think it was like 11,000 Iowa fans on Sunday. So, yeah, he said that the Cornhusker fans were, it was easy to turn it on once you were in the same building as all that.
I guess the only thing I'd left to say about baseball is that, you know, Shea Shaneman, that game that he came in against Maryland and then the bottom of the 10th inning, one freaking mistake and the ball's gone. That part of sports is just baseball. I mean, it's such a cruel game. It's a cruel game. And to watch that happen to Shea Shaneman, I think he looks like such a, I don't know, such a warrior kind of guy. You know, the look on his face, he gets that look on his face and he goes out and pitches. And I know sometimes he was inconsistent this year and it drove us nuts, but to watch that happen to him really sucked.
I'll tell you what, that guy came back 2 days later and he pitched 4 shutout innings against the same team.
Yeah.
And
that's a lot of guts.
That is guts.
Not 30 seconds before that home run, he was diving over our dugout wall trying to grab that foul ball that would have ended the inning. And yeah, I think he should have taken a little more time than he doesn't know anything else than to just run back out there and get back to work. But
yeah, he's a warrior with a 14-year-old's face. Jesus. He looks like a kid.
Okay.
Speaking of 14-year-olds, I've never seen any Husker player stay around after games or before games and talk to little kids and sign stuff more than Shaneman ever.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, nuts. I guess he's graduated.
We did confirm.
And, I think that next year they will need to find – Bryce Matthews and Max Anderson were good for their production, but – they're going to need to find somebody with grit. Some player, they got to have some guys that are just gritty sons of bitches that don't want to lose type of guys. And I think that's really, I don't know if we had that on this team, did we? I mean, really just like, or were they the song silent?
Kyle Perry is the vocal one that was like that. He just couldn't, unfortunately, he's so diminished with all of his injuries that he couldn't always back it up on the mound when they put him out there.
Right.
I think a guy to keep an eye on next year for some of that grit might be Ben Columbus. And
yeah, I see that.
Ben Columbus and possibly Gabe Swanson. But Ben Columbus seems to me, he made a comment in a press conference. He said, "My power numbers aren't anywhere close to what I expected them to be or where they were at last year in JUCO. And so I had to adjust and adjust my approach, and I had to put the ball in play for the team."
And he led us in home runs in fall ball, too.
Yeah.
Didn't have a single one.
Didn't have a single home run. I think that kind of mentality – you know, if he has the mindset to be a leader, I think we might see a little bit of grit out of him.
All right. I think that's going to do it. Thanks to everybody that tuned in. You know, our goal at Nebraska, my goal with Corn Nation, being the guy that runs the place, I would really like us to cover as many sports as we can. So I know a lot of you want to see football, but we're gonna try to cover as many as we possibly can. So thank you for tuning in. This was our end of year baseball season review. Unfortunately, Nebraska's baseball season is over, and they didn't make the NCAA tournament this year. And there you go. That's all I got. I got to figure out how to turn a fan on in this room because I'm about to pass out. Okay. Good night, Todd. Good night, Aaron.
Hey, good night, guys.
Good night, gentlemen.